So welcome to the first X Minute podcast, episode 79, I think. Last time I checked, you know how we do. We always find a way to just talk about football, relive the old memories, talk about the transfer drama at some point in time, and analyze teams basically on how they're performing, managers, what they're doing, what they're not doing, compare, contrast, solve puzzles here, there, and everywhere. My name is Ritimi Daramola. Some people call me Papi the Great. You find me on Twitter at PAPI_the Great. Thank you so much for always listening to this podcast. Please, please, please. I just want to ask before I introduce my guest, because I'm not recording this. I'm not going solo on this one. If you listen to this podcast on iTunes, can you just please do me a favor? Take 15, 16, 17 seconds to leave a review. Please say something nice about the podcast. So I have a guest with me, football aficionado, if the word is correct. His name is Peter, but he's not going to be denying me on this podcast because we're going to be doing it together. The back and forth is going to be is definitely going to be me and him on this podcast. So I have with me Peter Akinwusi. So you tell us your name, you tell us your social media handle, you tell us the team you are supporting, and of course the team that you hate the most.
Oh wow.
Your time starts now, Peter.
Okay, hi everyone. My name is Peter Akinwusi. At Ngbede on social media, or specifically on Twitter, that's at NGBEDE. I'm a Manchester United supporter. Do I actually hate any club? That's a problem. Perhaps Real Madrid. I can't stand them.
Perhaps. Then,
yeah. So it's...
Why?
Nothing personally. Just they're not one of my favorites to think about. They are the one club in terms of, in quote, culture. You know how there are so many buzzwords in football? I don't think I
respect.
So I guess. But other than that, even that is not really true, because there have been times I've, you know, looked and enjoyed football games that Real Madrid has been involved in. But beyond that, I wouldn't say hate is a pretty strong term to use.
That's true though. About
Shout out to Chelsea fans.
But you know that you're like one of the very first features on this podcast that had to think for a long period of time before they were able to come up with the team that they hate. Most features, most guests would off of their head without even thinking twice to say Chelsea or Liverpool. Most Manchester United fans hate Liverpool. I really don't know what the connection is. Is it the league trophy thing or the
I think we're supposed to be rivals. And I think that's what is ridiculously disingenuous about most of these club rivalries. For instance, a Liverpool fan will tell you he can't stand Man U, a Man U fan will tell you he can't stand Liverpool, and Liverpool and Barca and all of that. But I think what is amusing is how I'm meant to hate a club just because it's the club. Not necessarily they did anything wrong, but just because, oh, that club. It is weird.
Liverpool is Liverpool.
Yeah, sometimes. Like right now, for example, I'm enjoying to an extent what Klopp is doing with the club, even though I won't, I'm going to have to whisper this part. I won't be sad if they don't win the trophy, the Premier League.
Oh my god! Yeah.
But let's move on. Let's focus.
You know, my friend Peter just touched on the German. By the way, you find him on social media at Ngbede, that's NGBEDE. He just mentioned the German now. And on our script, we have German football up for discourse. There's been a whole lot about the revolution of German football from West Germany to East Germany, and then the fall of the Berlin Wall, and then the Bundesliga came alive in full force, and then Bayern Munich have dominated ever since, save for some breaks from the few clubs here and there, Borussia Dortmund of recent memory, which was led by Jurgen Klopp, of course. But there's a revolution. A team tried it before the corona break, but they were usurped at some point in time at the peak of the table. I'm talking about RB Leipzig, the young team managed by a young manager, the way they dismantled Spurs home and away in the Champions League. Was it round of 16 now? Yes.
Yes, it was. It was.
Round of 16. Tore Spurs apart. And it got some people wondering, yeah, maybe they didn't get here by fluke. You look at the squad, Timo Werner, Sabitzer, the left back from Manchester City. I've forgotten his name. Is it Celina?
Angelino,
yeah. Angelino. I mean, then you still have some other guys who have been there for a long time. The fact that they sold this player to Liverpool, I've forgotten his name now. This is Guinean. Naby Keita, to Liverpool. Yeah. Still didn't make any difference. They seem to have a strong base and all of that. So the question now is, The question now is, German football works always. We always envy the Germans for what they've done with football. But Peter, can you just help us understand how the revolution has come to be what is being envied these days? I mean, from the fall of the Berlin Wall up to now, what exactly are they doing right that most of us are thinking, wow, this model is working?
So to answer that question, it's one of those things where to start off with, I think we need to have a conversation around, it depends on who you're speaking to. A lot of people will overlook the Germans. There's a friend of mine, Sammy, shout out to Sammy, he's an Arsenal fan and a lovely, lovely fan of Bayern Munich and German football. One of the things that he loves about the Germans is, you know, there's this culture around them that involves mostly punctuality, efficiency and all of that. You will find that most ball cultures sort of mirror the societies where they are domiciled. So you see, for instance, the conversation around how the English people seem to value, which is weird, they seem to value grit and what they claim is passion over the flair, over stylish football, as it were. You'll find that the French are a very flamboyant bunch, so their football tends to be flamboyant, even though that's not how they won the last World Cup. The Champs football is not necessarily the most flamboyant around. You will find that the Spaniards also have similar tastes. They are fond of producing technical wizards and all of that. While the Germans have always been known for efficiency. So it goes down from their society to the way their football has been planned since about, the 60s, the 70s thereabouts. Yeah. And it has bled into the footballing culture. So what we have is a situation where clubs around the entire country have fantastic academies, have so many coaches who are given to ensuring that the footballing system is one that has to be envied the world over. I remember when we were trying to schedule, you know, conversations for this podcast, we spoke about how, you know, there was a time when, because of the World War and the Cold War and all of that, we seem to have East Germany and Western Germany, right?
Yes.
And it seemed weird, you know, to think about how we've barely had any footballers come from Eastern Germany. From Eastern Germany, as it were, even since the war, you know, was brought down. But demolition. I think it starts off with planning, like I said. First and foremost, the Germans are incredible at planning. We see how, if you think about it, look at their track record from about, let's say, the Euros in 96, thereabout. They won it in Euro 96, the famous Oliver Bierhoff contribution. I think France 98, they made the last eight. In 2000, they failed, as it were. In 2002, they were in the final. Euro 2004, they made the quarterfinals. At the World Cup in 2006, that was in, they were at home, right?
I think they made it to the quarterfinals. Yeah, I can't forget about the semifinal against Italy.
Exactly. Then in Spain, they lost to Spain in the final in 2008. 2010 again, it was the same thing. Spain pipped them. 2010, Spain did well. But we see how, I think 2012, it was them in Italy, and then in 2014 they won. Now you can look at that picture, you can look at that timeline, and it seems like, well, it's a mixed bag. But I'll ask you to point to literally any other country that has been that consistent.
I'll be hanging around that closely and that consistently.
And I think it would be really, really, really difficult to come across any country that has done that well. And you ask yourself, how did they pull that off? For starters, I remember how one of the biggest statistics that was going around at the time during the 2010 World Cup, when, you know, Capello led England to the, was it 2010? Yeah, I think the 2010 World Cup, Capello led England and then crashed out in the, I think, in the semis or so. No, not the semis, in the quarterfinal, thereabouts, after the infamous goal, the goal that was never given and all of that. And there was a conversation that was had about how at the time, there were, for every English coach at the UEFA A or B level, I think there were 10 more or 5 more, I can't remember the exact statistic, who were Germans.
Wow, so Germany, 5 more Germans.
Invested heavily in ensuring that as many people as possible got into the coaching system and got their badges. Now, what's remarkable about it is, if you check about 2 years ago, I hear it cost about £340 then. I wrote this down because it was an interesting figure. It cost about £340 to get your UEFA B certification. right? In Germany. Mm. Meanwhile, in the UK, I hear costs can go from about £700 to £2,000 for the same qualification. Now, wow. Already, you can see that there's a very, very high bar to entry for English coaches, while there's a very, very low bar to entry for German coaches. That will definitely have a multiplier.
For German coaches.
Yeah, yeah, it would definitely, you know, affect. And we've always heard this conversation about, you know, this German mentality. You know, when you hear Der Mannschaft, the conversation that has always surrounded that name has been, wow, these guys are brutal forces of nature. Mm. There's nothing really...
German,
you know,
machines.
The machines, essentially, and all of that. But over the years, we've seen how that has changed. I mean, we've seen that there's more focus on the technicalities of the game, you know, pressing, running. And I think it coincided, one of the things that is amusing is how it coincided with Pep Guardiola's time in Germany. Mm. He wasn't necessarily the reason why everybody started focusing on it, but there are more and more coaches now.
He seemed to amplify it.
Yeah, he seemed to amplify it. And it was like, look, if it's working for Bayern Munich, we might as well try it. There's no harm in trying it. And look at the result today. If you look across the German spectrum of coaching, you will find young individuals who are given to incredibly tactical football, as it were.
Mm.
Yeah, and I think that's something that we need to think about when we talk about them. If we talk about the fact that, okay, the German World Cup squads, for instance, if you look at each and every one of them from 2010 thereabouts, in fact, yeah, from about 2010, you'll see that there's a huge diversity. It is not just, as it were, pure Germans. There are a lot of immigrants that have been, you know, making a name for themselves in the team. Ideally, someone like Miroslav Klose shouldn't have made it because he's a Polish immigrant, as it were. But look at him. He went on to become the historic figure that he is, the records that he had made, you know, he set. Look at the likes of Jeremy Boateng, look at the likes of Mesut Ozil and all of that, the Podolskis of this world. Essentially, like I said at the beginning, German culture is very accepting of immigrants. German culture seems to be not just efficient, it's also, you know, it's a melting pot of sorts. And if you look at the national team, it reflects that currently. So I think for starters, it's a couple of things. Like I said, if we're going to answer your question properly and just tie it up, proper planning, proper diversity, proper coaching, definitely they've reaped rewards in the national team and across their football league.
Talking about ripple effect of proper coaching, talking about the ripple effect of diversity, the likes of Pep Guardiola came and must have influenced a few youngsters who were thinking or looking, and maybe at some point they were in the background, but later saw what these guys were doing and said to themselves, we want to do stuff like that. And one name comes to mind, that's the manager of the current manager of the RB Leipzig side.
Yeah,
his age usually goes before his name. It's usually for most of us, our names go before our age. But most of the time, you want to say Nagelsmann, but you first say that 30-something-year-old Leipzig coach Nagelsmann, and everybody is amazed about how he has come this far and how he has become this consistent with such a side that is usually so young. Because we are guilty of tying experience with age. The older you are, of course, the older the berry, the blacker the berry, the sweeter the juice. I mean, you should be better. You should get better with time and all of that. But he seemed to have found a way to develop such a young squad. They seem to be the object, the real practical object of German football: efficiency, diversity, and then everything that German football is. What exactly has he gotten right, or should I say, is he getting right to be in the spotlight, to have been in the spotlight, and to continue to be in the spotlight? Because such a young star, such a young manager, is going to be in the spotlight for as long as possible. We are probably looking at the manager, possible contender for manager of the decade. I'm talking about 2020 to 2029. Consistency.
Oh, wow. Those are big claims.
Yeah, bar any unforeseen circumstances and all things being equal. I just want to ask you now, what exactly do you think he has done so well that has attracted so much attention and everybody's saying, hey, look at what Nagelsmann is doing at RB Leipzig?
Okay, so for Julian Nagelsmann, one of the things that I think we need to talk about is, I'll give him props. So we have to give him props for what he's done. But I think one mistake we always tend to make in football is forgetting that it is always, always down to the environment. Mm. The same way we're hailing Germany for being great at creating a fantastic environment for coaching talent and playing talent to thrive, we also have to think that the best clubs have always been clubs, the best clubs in terms of projects that have done well in delivering trophies, good football. I know good football is a relative term. The individuals who love to see clean sheets, the individuals who love to see 6-4 score lines and all of that. The environment is always important. And what do I mean by the environment is always important? The Nagelsmann story starts off with his own story in terms of Germany allowed him. He's the kind of guy, I mean, this is a 32-year-old who seemed to have a decent to promising career in football. And then, you know, the horrible injury that strikes him down. Essentially, he can't continue playing football anymore because of his knee injuries and whatnot. I mean, he ended his football at the under-19 level. Normally, you would find that individuals like that, generally, yes, even if they go back into football and not into general society, if they go back into football, we won't hear about them for probably 10, 20 years, you know?
Yeah, before they start to pick up.
Yeah. But for some weird reason, after taking, I think he went to university and had one of those business administration degrees, yeah, and then went back to Augsburg and worked under Tuchel, Thomas Tuchel, the current PSG coach, right? And we saw how he rose from being an assistant at Hoffenheim, one of the hated clubs. We'll get to that eventually, I'm sure. One of the hated clubs in Germany. He rose from being an assistant coach at Hoffenheim and was made the permanent manager at Hoffenheim. I think he was about 27 or 28 at the time.
I was even thinking 26.
Yeah, no, he was 27 at the time. 27 or 28, I'm not sure. And I remember how he was anathema. Everybody was losing their minds. Like, what are you doing? First of all, remember that Hoffenheim is one of the clubs that is bankrolled by a billionaire, something that the Germans have not liked. We'll get to that club structure and the whole 50 plus.
Yeah, 50 plus one thing.
I think he took over from Hobbs Stevens at the time. And he was, first of all, Hoffenheim was hated. Then secondly, you hire a 27, 28-year-old. It just seemed like one of those, you're taunting us. You definitely don't have respect for us. But he did a fantastic job. I mean, because of him, the likes of Kramaric and all of those players did well, you know. They avoided relegation. Basically, at some point, even qualified for the Champions League. I mean, this was something that was unheard of for a club like Hoffenheim.
Yes, that's true.
But they were in the Champions League at the point, right?
Yeah.
As much as we're saying this is great, we have to remember that the environment at Hoffenheim was great. It was an environment that allowed someone like
enabling.
He was enabling. They gave him a chance to shine. And while all of this was going on, a parallel movement was occurring at Leipzig, or should I say, in the larger, one of the jokes I make is there's a man called Ralf Rangnick. I always refer to him as the driving force behind something called the Rangnick Cinematic Universe, for those of us who are huge Marvel fans. There was a stat I saw. I think the top 6 coaches in Germany have either worked for him or worked with him at some point, right?
Wow.
Now, what did he do? Essentially, at a point, Leipzig was the most hated club. He is the most hated club probably in Germany. But the cool thing about it is an environment was created where, look, there was a blueprint that was laid down. There was an idea for how to make that blueprint a reality, right? And then you could see that the club said, look, we need someone who matches these values that we've come up with. At the time, Rangnick had come up with the idea of, I think, competence. Yeah, like 3 Ks. They called it competence, concept, and I think capital. I can't remember the exact, but those were the values that were supposed to drive the football club at the time.
And going forward.
Yeah, going forward. And at the time, Rangnick had it. It was so bad that they said for coaches, they didn't find someone who they felt was suitable enough. Rangnick stepped into the dugout. He became the coach at RB Leipzig. Yeah, that's how serious it was. They came up with the idea that, look, we will not sign anybody who is above 24 years old. We will always ensure that whenever we sign players, right, they are young players. They are not just players who adapt to our football, but they are players who we know that can grow with us. And at the end of the day, when the time is right, if we need to release them, because they've sucked. I mean, it's so amazing the web that has been built. The Red Bull Group bought these clubs. There's one in New York, there's one in Ghana, there's one in Brazil, there's one in Austria, Salzburg, and then there's the one in Germany. Yeah, in fact, there are two in Germany. There's one in the second division thereabouts, one of the lower leagues. I think the same thing too in Austria. And the idea is that, look, we will have a blueprint, just like what the City Group is doing. We'll have a blueprint that is enforced across every single one of these clubs. So we sign young players, right? When yes, there's money, but we're not just going to try and use financial muscle to make our way through. Mm. And if you look at it, one of the mistakes people make is, I think we're fond of accusing people of being checkbook managers, and we talk about the high transfer fee. Look, it's just because we're in today's time and age that these transfer fees look like they're a lot. I mean, I support a club where I saw my manager break the transfer fee in the 90s about 3 or 4 times. He bought the most expensive players at the time. It's just natural. You want to do well, you have to buy the best players. To buy the best players, you have to open your checkbook. And we need to be very careful to think about it. Sometimes, it's not really the high transfer fees that matter. What are the wages, for instance? Nobody ever seems to think about wages. Because the higher your wage bill, it is often expected that if you have a high wage bill, it's because you're spending on players who are worth their salt, except your name is Manchester United, who, in fact, let's not digress. Let's focus.
Oh my God. He had to bring that in. Focus.
But at the time, you see, about for 2 or 3 years, I think 2 or 3 years, RB Leipzig spent less on wages than Bayer Leverkusen, Schalke, Wolfsburg, the so-called traditional big clubs in Germany. Do you understand? And this is because Rangnick made it clear, look, every talent that comes from east of Germany must come through our professional academy, which is incredible. I mean, if we talk about talent that has made it in the past decade from eastern Germany, we can only think about Toni Kroos. Toni Kroos is the only, out of 23 players who have represented Germany, about, I think Toni Kroos was the only person that was consistent in terms of first team football. Even Timo Werner right now is only getting his place because a lot of people who are ahead of him in the queue are either growing old or it is their time now. But if you remember, there was a sport that was representing Germany at one of the Confederation Cups. It is reflected in the fact that Rangnick has always said, look, I want a situation where we have individuals who come from the academy in the East and then they rise to the ranks. So having said all of that about the background, you come to someone like Nagelsmann. Nagelsmann has spent a lot of time focused on ensuring that, look, since he couldn't play anymore, he spent a lot of time working on the intellect, working on the technical side of the game, and, you know, building up his knowledge of the game. And he's one of those people that has clear ideas. When we talk about being welded to his ideas, I think he's more welded to his ideas, or as welded to his ideas as a Bielsa or a Pep Guardiola. You know, and it's something that is reflected simply because environment was there for him to thrive. And he spent a lot of time going through these methods. And look at him today. All right. And it's incredible that we see him leading. He's a young manager leading a young club. I mean, he had people who were older than him when he went to coach at Hoffenheim. But they bought into what he was telling them simply because they could see, look, this is a guy who has a vision and he can do very, very well. And, I mean, naturally, they as it were, followed him into the war. And look at, we can see the results. It's unfortunate that, yes, what happened was the break has been enforced. But we could see what they were playing. I mean, the football was amazing. Not amazing for the sake of, you know, being happy that we're looking at a young person doing well, but because they were literally tearing down teams in front of them and they were adapting properly too. He's not, as much as he's welded his ideas, he's been flexible enough to adjust to whatever comes up against him. And I think, I mean, there's a young lad who comes from Chelsea, with an Ampadu, and the likes of Tyler Adams.
These are
individuals who we know probably can't get first team football anywhere else, but they are at Leipzig and thriving. The likes of Nkunku, they are at Leipzig and thriving, playing good football. And you can tell that in a couple of years' time, someone will come and buy them. It happened with Sadio Mane. I mean, it happened with Minamino at Salzburg. Do we need to talk about Haaland? Of course, even though, yes, a few of these players were bought from Salzburg, not necessarily Leipzig. But it's because there was an enabling culture, an enabling environment, and a philosophy that was followed through and through. So that, to an extent, is one of the reasons why we have, what's his name, Nagelsmann, doing really well as he is currently.
That was actually something revelatory. I think it's a content that you would have to browse 2 or 3 or 4 websites or platforms for to get a full story of, well, thanks to Peter, he has helped us to sum everything up. Now, we talk about an enabling environment, and this brings us back home. This is the First 6 Minute Podcast. My name is Rotimi Daramola on Twitter, Papi_TheGreat. I'm with my friend Peter Akinusi on Twitter at Ngbede, that's NGBEDE, or the Dunder Mufflin Paper Co. We need to get to that, but let's focus on the enabling and the enabling environment. Now, we come to Nigeria, and maybe if you have noticed, I've been up and up about recently on my Twitter page about how Nigerian football clubs and all of that. Now, I don't even want to touch on the Nigerian football clubs. Now, let's talk about Nigeria's football situation at the moment, Gennaro Rohr versus Amadou Pinnick and all of that. Now, Amadou Pinnick is making demands and all of that. You can't travel, you can't do this, you can't do that. Now, is even the country, are they providing an enabling environment for either this manager or the rumored manager to replace the current manager, because there's no smoke without fire. It's like okay, you're threatening this one. Is it that you have a better replacement? If you are saying stuff like there are a whole lot of managers that want to coach Nigeria and all of that. So is there even, before we talk about manager choice, the country they're coming from, their skin color, is there an enabling environment for football and for managers who want to manage teams, national teams for Nigeria?
I know you asked me this question, and I'm supposed to be answering questions, but if I could flip it a bit and ask you, is there an enabling environment for anything or anybody in Nigeria to start with?
All of a sudden, I'm caught off guard. Like, why? Just like I've been throwing all the punches all round long, and all of a sudden, one heavy punch just hits me, and I'm like, oh, I'm stunned. Like, actually, the answer is obvious.
The answer is obvious. And you see,
the answer is obvious
is because we just had a long conversation where I made a lot of noise about how, oh, England does this, and we see it in their national football team and in the football teams that exist in the Premier League. Spain does that. France does that. In fact, down to Italy, I've read a lot of conversations that have been documented about how Coverciano, the more or less the mecca of Italian football, where coaches are made and broken, right? For you to get your coaching badges, you have to go to that place, write what is the equivalent of a thesis on whatever, you know, football concept. And some of the best football theses from that Coverciano Academy or structure have been stuff that Ancelotti has done, stuff that Allegri has done. I mean, we see how the Italians are passionate. You watch Italian football. Even right now, the Italian football seems to be in a lull. You can see the passion for the love of God. I'm not a fan of Antonio Conte, but you cannot take the passion away from him and his football. He wants 100%. I mean, you've read stories of Pirlo having nursing a knee injury, and Conte told him, Baba, you're going to climb the football pitch today and you're going to play for me. And Pirlo, one of the individuals who can be asked on a football pitch, gave for him. And you ask, what is it about them? And it's, you can't lie. It is the society, it is the culture that has bled into sport. In Nigeria, it is every man for himself. Let's be honest.
God for us all.
Exactly. You know, we turn to God. God, for some weird reason, is supposed to be in charge of our government, even though he has given us common sense. But so if we start with our society, everybody seems to have to provide for themselves. If I'm going to answer your question, the short answer as to whether or not we have an enabling environment for coaches and football to thrive, no. You know, I told you that thing about, there was an earlier conversation we had about how...
Yeah, of course.
Anybody that you can hang out with your friends and ask them, oh, was there one individual who you felt would do great at the national team level for his country eventually? I mean, for Nigeria eventually. And people will tell you, yes, there was this one guy, there was that. And trust me, I have had...
We have a long list.
Over and over and over and over again. All right, I've lived in at least two or three different cities in Nigeria, and it's the same story. They tell you, man, there was this guy in my secondary school. We were so sure he would make it to football. Where is he today? Oh, I think he's an engineer. Oh, I think he is. Oh, some are even dead, tragically. So, our society has bled into football in that we have great football talent, but most of the time they don't actualize this talent until they leave these shores and go elsewhere. And I don't blame them. I always tell people, please get your bag, get what you need to do well in this life. And you can see what's going on. Raw has been mandated.
Secure the bag.
Exactly. Sometimes I look at national team and I say, in a country of 200 million people, let's assume the national team is supposed to be a representation of the best footballing talent, are you going to tell me that that right back or that left back or that center back or that striker
is the best we have to represent us in this country?
Out of 100 million people, okay, let's say that's too big of a number. Let's cut it down to 40 million. Are you trying to tell me that from 40 million people, you can't get me a better striker than that? But the truth is possibly, yeah, because it's one thing to have talent. It's another thing to craft and hone that talent into something that is to write home about at the end of the day. So we don't have that. Secondly, you know what? I'm sorry to say this to NFF fans and NFF affiliates who are listening. Well, we've seen that 9 out of 10 times what happens at the administrative level of Nigerian football is a racket. And when I see a racket, they might have the best intentions, but more often than not, what we tend to see is something that does not truly, truly represent proper thinking and proper planning. Why are you having a spat with your coach out in the open and threatening him? You said he should come and do a job. What are the terms of his contract? Are the terms of his contract that he can't travel? Really? A grown-up man? Secondly, okay, you say you want him to go around the nation picking up talent. My brother, if we look around our national leagues, I mean, we see that they are trying their best to make ends meet. I saw your thread the other day about social media. There's horrible... I remember there's literally no conversation on social media about Nigerian football that is anywhere near enough to engender passion for this thing. You will find people are more willing to watch the North Africans, South Africans. Sometimes you find people
rather than our own.
Yes. And you know why? It's not necessarily because the quality available at home is the best. But the truth is, what are we doing to even sell our product? Nothing. Social media. I think when I went through your thread and I saw that there's some football clubs who haven't touched their social media accounts for about 18 months. And I was struggling. This is a generation right now.
Oh, so the one I even saw was even better. 18 months. And they have followers.
They do have followers. I don't know how they got them. There was a time when anybody used to try their best. I think they had this lad, this man, Farrell Alakuta or so, who was trying his best to ensure that the media presence, the online presence for Aimba was good. But outside that, it's little or next to nothing. I've seen, there was a time when City of David in Lagos had a fantastic online presence. They had a website, they were trying to sell jerseys and whatnot. Would you believe that the best reporting, some of the best reporting I've seen on Nigerian football, for example, the guys that at Mountain of Fire, there was a team football video I watched and I read, also read a blog article covering them. And I'm like, wow. It took someone to come from outside to document our own story this well. And this is not to say Nigerians are not trying their best. The honest truth is, we have great sports journalists in this country. Some guys who are putting work. You know, you made a comment about experience. Whether we like it or not, experience is important. If an individual has put in years, it's expected that he will have some form of, as it were, know-how.
Advantage.
And knowledge that somebody else who just came into the game doesn't have.
Will not have.
Where are these guys? What are they passing on to the younger lads? Do you understand? And we are not documenting our story. The narrative is poor to start with. Secondly, the individuals who want to make a change are not given the chance. This is not a slight on Raw. I said it to you earlier on. Why is he? If he's the best we can do, that's fine. But I don't think we're actually creating a situation for him to do the best with what he should be able to do. That's one. Two, if you look at his... And this is not me denigrating him in any way. But look at his CV. Bordeaux. He coached in France for a while. Coached in Switzerland for a while. Went back to France. Has coached in, I think, Gabon, Niger, Burkina Faso. And then, boom, his next big job is Nigeria. We have to ask some questions. This is not looking down on the things he has done as a player. Yes, the great guy let's not say great guy. He had a decent football career and all of that. But is he really the best we can do?
Is he the best we can afford?
I think, maybe because they'll tell you there's no
money. I think that's another question.
They'll tell you there's no money. So, yeah, this is the best we can do right now. Okay, let's assume he's the best we can do. Why is it that we're not investing? I told you, Germany, I will never forget how, as at 2010, when Oliver Kahn spills the ball and Rivaldo pokes it into the net, right? Conversations were being had at that point about revamping the entire structure of the academy football system in Germany. About a decade later, we saw the results. We saw the results. It was clear. There was investment in coaches. There was investment in academy. what's going on with our coaches here in Nigeria? I talk to individuals who coach here in football. I mean, football here in Nigeria. And the first thing that comes to my mind is, I really wish you could leave this country. It sounds unpatriotic, but it feels, for me, it's just these guys' dreams will be truncated if we do not leave this country in the next 2 or 3 years.
It still all boils down to an enabling environment, which is unavailable at the moment.
I think it's unavailable. Sorry for the long-winded answer, but I think, yeah, to be honest with you, no. These things are not available at the moment. They are not available
expository answer from my friend Peter, who at some point in time I heard the passion in his voice, like, oh man, we hope, we don't hate Nigerian football, we would love for it to be better, but some way, for some reason, somehow, something is just not working. The politicking is much more heavier, weightier than the sporting activities in the sporting industries. And it's sad for Nigerian football fans, because we always have to turn to the Western world for football content, great football content, because at the end of the day, the people, the industries, the entities, the brands, the organizations who are supposed to be feeding us, satisfying our hunger for football content, are too busy doing other things rather than what their brands, or what they say their brands portray. The First 6 Minutes podcast, if you have listened thus far, you have to leave us a comment. You have to say something about Nigerian football. Say something about what you think about the current state of Nigerian football, not just club football, but NFF as a whole. What is going on? I had a discussion in, I think, episode 74 or 6 or 3, you should find it, about the longevity of Nigerian players. Why is it that we see some players who featured in the 2005, Holland 2005, or maybe all those youth tournaments in the 03s, and then the likes of Toni Kroos is still playing, but the likes of Christian, I forgot the name of that guy again, one tall, very tall, lanky guy, who ended up as one of the... Who ended up as one of the MVPs of that tournament, did not... Where is he now? I hear he's somewhere in Germany. Toni Kroos is playing at top level in Real Madrid. Chris Santos is playing at some German Bundesliga 2 or Bundesliga 3. And then we try to compare longevity. This thing is not luck. Most of Nigerians, we tend to turn to religion and say, oh, it's luck, it's destiny, and all of that. Yeah, maybe it has a hand to play to it, but at some point in time...
Oh, please, let's not do that.
At some point in time, you just have to look past all of that and say, the enabling environment, longevity issues, the issues of putting immediate profit over long-term value. We just want to win this trophy. Let's win the under 20 trophy. And then when it gets to under 23, we mess up the Olympic, we mess up. And then there's no way we can build a system, because we're always poaching people from Cyprus, from Greece, from
Malta.
And we celebrate them so much. And then we can't get a gel, we can't get a team, we can't get a structure. And all of this happens partly because the NFF is not really invested in what it is appointed to do, which is football. And also partly because there's no enabling system. The country as itself is, like my friend said, every man for himself, God Almighty for us all. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the podcast. I mean, I just asked, I know that I only asked Peter like 3 questions, but I can't believe that I've got so much that I don't feel like even asking him anything again, but I can't let him go just like that. It's impossible. So, Peter, your favorite, you know, this moment now, no live football and all of that. So, I mean, there has to be that favorite, one favorite test of the favorite test football moment that you saw and you can never forget. Mine was, I still say it every time, 2002, I think it's 2002, 2003, I'm not sure, UEFA Champions League, Real Madrid versus Bayern Munich, Bayern Leverkusen at the final. Zizou's goal, Zidane's goal, clear as day. There are so many other memories. 05 Istanbul, of course, Greece in 07, 08 Moscow, Champions League finals now. But I started watching football basically in the 2000s. I can't forget Ghana, Nigeria. Is it Cameroon, Nigeria in the final? Is it Cameroon, Nigeria? Yeah. The penalty that was supposed to, some said it crossed the line, some said it didn't cross the line. That was at Nigeria. I wake up and I believe I crossed the line. So that's the point. Nigeria lost that final. It was hurtful. That's where I started. But for me, it was that Champions League final Zinane's goal. I still can't believe it. I watch it over and over again. I don't know how the ball found the back of the net, but that's how maestros do. So for you, what's that memory that in your head you're like, you can't ever, never, never, never forget this one?
For me, there's a bunch of them, if I'm being honest with you. I'm going to
be... The best one. Don't come here and say you have two or three. Give me one.
That's the thing. I'm trying not to be that annoying. Do I talk about Yakini's goal where he's
crossing? You see, you're going there.
Ole in 99. Ole scoring that goal in 99. Also scoring a goal in the semi-final in 2006.
Oh, Lord. Is it? I think that's the curler. Is it...
Yeah, that curler.
Yeah. I remember your Kintas.
I would never forget that goal.
Man, memories.
That was an amazing goal. Do I talk about in that same tournament? What Perlo was controlling the entire game.
In the final,
there's a whole bunch of them
to watch.
Yeah. But I think if I'll pick one, it's probably I'll probably go with the final. 99, because as a kid, it was wild having to see what I thought was what finished, what done for. I didn't get to watch the game live, right? Because for obvious reason, broadcasting then wasn't that well here in Nigeria. But I remember watching the replays, and even though I knew the result, feeling so terrible,
intrigued.
Like, how could we have possibly let this slip and all that? Roy Keane couldn't play, Paul Scholes couldn't play either, you know, at the time. And at the very last minute, Ole literally... one of the things I will never forget is I remember asking myself why Gary Neville happened to be where he was on the pitch. It seemed weird that, you know, he wasn't where he was meant to be in terms of his positioning. Mm. But that goal was literally one of the things that helped cement... I think supporting United in early 90s, thereabouts. But that game and that goal cemented my love for United. It felt like, you know what, that whole, I know it's a cliche, but that never say die attitude that has come supposedly.
Never give up.
Yeah, never give up, as it were. Mm. Yeah, so I think that's my favorite moment.
Peter Akinosi on the First 30 Minutes podcast. We've been talking football for over 40 minutes now, and if you have listened thus far, I want to say thank you. I appreciate you so much. Thank you so much for your time, Peter. You'll find him on Twitter at NGBEDE, that's NGBEDE. First X Minutes Podcast, episode 79.
Shout out to every individual who is working, every one of our health workers who is doing his best to ensure lives are preserved. We're really, really grateful. We don't say this enough, but we're really, really grateful. In a system that is not necessarily set up for you to thrive, you're doing your best. Mm-hmm. And you're literally, as permit me to use this wartime analogy, even though I shouldn't, you're keeping the enemy at the door at bay. Thank you very, very much. Enemy at the gates, rather, at bay. Thank you very, very much. We really appreciate it.
I seen on Peter's cake, wine, you're doing well. You are doing very, very well. And for those of us who still think it's a holiday, it's not a break. It's not a holiday. Please take all precautionary measures. Stay the poop at home. Don't go anywhere. Kids might be listening. So stay at home, please. Help us flatten this curve. Whatever the curve is, wherever it's going to be, help us get past this period as quickly as possible. I'll catch you in another episode. Until then, whatever you're doing, stay safe. Make sure it's profitable. Mind your own business. Drink a whole lot of water. I will catch you in the next episode. Bye for now.
Cheers.